mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the group that is hoping to once again change the way Ohio redraws its congressional and legislative districts has submitted its petition signatures to force the issue onto the ballot in November. Why is this so hard to get right? Also this morning, scammers always go where the money is, and with Zelle, Venmo, Cash App, and more becoming so popular, we'll tell you how to protect yourself when using these digital payment and money transfer platforms. And we'll get the latest update from the Hancock County OSU Extension and 4-H program as summer hits full swing and the county and state fairs get closer. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, July 8th, 2024. I trust that you had a good 4th of July Independence Day celebration. I hope you still have all of your extremities. Did you maybe have one or two drinks? Maybe alcoholic beverages at some point over the weekend? Everybody did, right? I thought this was kind of interesting. A new analysis of Google Trends data finds that the most purchased alcoholic beverages are wine and gin. Now, for some reason, they just looked at the most purchased alcoholic beverages from Costco. So, I don't know why they chose Costco, but that is, I guess, sort of a stand-in for all alcoholic beverage purchases in this country. And they found that wine and gin are the most purchased alcoholic beverages. Which even in Tennessee, home of Jack Daniels, is not whiskey. It actually was gin, the top favorite alcoholic Costco purchase. Let's see here. There were some outliers in Georgia. This is Captain Morgan Spiced Rum. Texans are going for Kahlua Coffee Liqueur during their Costco run. And when it comes to America's favorite cocktails, the Aperol Spritz, right? Is that it? I don't know. I'm not a big cocktail drinker, so I don't know. It's 22 states listed. That is the as the favorite. 17 states, including Maine and New York, love margaritas. 9 other states prefer an old-fashioned. So the alcoholic beverages in the country. I just thought that was kind of interesting coming off the 4th of July holiday. Many of us drink to it. There are now, speaking of the 4th of July, there are now, 361 days until the next 4th of July. And this may be something you might want to work on between now and then. A new survey of Gen Xers finds that maybe we should spend some serious time boning up on our Independence Day facts before next 4th of July rolls around. This is a poll that showed 1/3 of those in that demographic, Generation X, believe that the 4th of July commemorates America's independence from Native Americans. All right. That's 1 in 4, or 1 in 3. 1/3. More than 8% believed July 4th celebrates America's independence from South America. 2% said it was it's America's independence from French Canada. All right. And not to pick on Generation X, the survey on the whole finds that Americans of all ages need some brushing up on our historical facts. More than 1,000 people took part in this poll, and just 58% of total respondents correctly knew that America declared its independence from Great Britain. On that topic, the poll showed that 1/3 of respondents incorrectly spelled the word independence, with searches for how to spell Independence Day jumping 85% over the holiday weekend. So, even if we know what it's all about, we probably should learn how to spell it. how do you spell USA? That's when you know
that you have had one too many to drink on the 4th of July. How do you spell USA? How do you play that again? All right. All right. Over the long extended holiday weekend, did you see this? NASA's first astronauts on Mars return to Earth, sort of. Over the weekend, a year-long NASA Mars mission simulation came to an end. You remember, we talked about this a year ago. These astronauts went into a controlled environment, this big bubble designed to simulate life on Mars, and they would be there for a year. Well, the year was up over the weekend, and the four volunteers who took part in the project exited their sealed habitat at the Johnson Space Center in Houston. They had spent a total of 378 days living and working inside a 3D printed habitat dubbed Mars Dune Alpha. NASA will be using their experiences to plan for actual crewed missions to the Red Planet, which they hope to begin launching in the late 2030s or the early 2040s. So, pioneers, to be sure. Pioneers in deep space without actually having to go to deep space. They exited the sealed Mars bubble on Saturday. I saw that story, and I was thinking, why did they do that? I mean, I know why they did this at the Johnson Space Center in Houston, because NASA has all kinds of people there, and it's mission control, and you know, all of that. I get it, but wouldn't it have been better? Wouldn't it have been just perfect if they had done this experiment at Area 51? Wouldn't that have been? That would have been all kinds of awesome. That's where they should have done the experiment. I think they missed an opportunity right there to do it at Area 51. Give people something to talk about. Let's see. Here's an item that I saw on the newswire this morning, jumped out at me just because it is interesting. We talk about, you know, starting the day with the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This is just definitely one of those things you put out there because it's incredibly random, but yet very interesting. The hippopotamus, which is one of the largest land mammals on our planet, apparently can glide through the air. When I saw this headline on the newswire, I was like, well, I've got to learn more about this. Researchers at the Royal Veterinary College discovered that this is in Europe, discovered that when the hippo is running, it spends 15% of its time completely airborne with none of its feet on the ground. 15% of the time, it is completely airborne, gliding through the air. Now, mind you, hippos can weigh up to 4,000 pounds, yet still reach speeds of 18 miles an hour while running. I don't know that I could run 18 miles an hour, and I don't weigh 4,000 pounds. Researchers found that all 4 feet can leave the ground for about 3/10 of a second. The study also found that hippos were more athletic than elephants, but less athletic than rhinos. So, fascinating research. I have no idea if that's even useful at all, but it is interesting nonetheless. That hippos, as it turns out, can glide through the air, at least momentarily, while they're running. That's really interesting. Like I said, I told you, it was very random, and I don't know that it has any useful purpose knowing that, but now you know. And finally this morning, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. A man in Baltimore, Maryland is now $50,000 richer thanks to his grandma. The unidentified man hit the lottery recently and says the secret is something he learned from his grandmother a while back. He said, my grandmother told me that not everyone can be lucky every day. Basing his strategy on that advice, he buys 2 scratch-off tickets when the mood strikes him. And if they're both losers, He's done playing the lottery for that day. But if at least one of them is a winner, that's a sign that it may be his lucky day. And if you're thinking, oh, that's just happenstance, keep in mind he's won the lottery now. Not once, but twice he has hit the jackpot. As a matter of fact, it's not just twice, it's three times. He said, I've won big twice before, but the last time was a long time ago. He said, I wasn't sure that it would ever happen again. Well, now it has. And so the moral of the story, as what I take away from this, call your grandma every now and then. That's, I mean, she has good advice.
This is ONN.
I'm Jay Fox on the Ohio News Network. The Dayton Daily News reports that more than a third of the state's group homes that handle children who have been delinquent or are victims of neglect and abuse are located in Montgomery County. This has put an undue strain on Montgomery County courts and related police departments. In 2023, Dayton Police serviced almost 3,000 calls to these facilities, including 600 to one in particular. Zoning law options are now being explored to better serve a population the juvenile court judge Helen Wallace says is simply being ignored. A Columbus two-year-old is now out of surgery but still in critical condition after a drive-by shooting last night. Sergeant Joseph Albert of the Columbus Police Department is asking the perpetrators to turn themselves into Columbus Police.
I want to send a message out to those individuals in that gray four-door sedan. You obviously know your involvement here. You might not have intended to shoot a two-year-old, but you did shoot a two-year-old. We're asking you to do the right thing. Call, turn yourself in as a two-year-old little boy who did not deserve this for anything.
Ohio will be well represented in the Major League Baseball All-Star Game next week in Texas. The Cleveland Guardians have two starters, Jose Ramirez and Stephen Kwan, and three other backups in the game. Ellie De La Cruz will represent the Cincinnati Reds. The game is 1 week from tomorrow. For more state news, go to onnradio.com. For the Ohio News Network, I'm Jay Fox.
So now to our cover story this morning. Last week, the group Citizens Not Politicians submitted more than 730,000 signatures on petitions collected throughout the state to get an initiative on the November ballot that would once again change how the state of Ohio redraws its congressional and legislative districts. Few people know how challenging that process can be better than State Senator Rob McCauley, who served on this last iteration of the Ohio Redistricting Commission that drew the maps that we currently have. And Senator, thanks very much for taking the time this morning. I would imagine on some level it is hard not to take it personally when there is so much criticism of the process and the final result that we got from the Redistricting Commission. How do you respond to this group's argument that the system is still broken and still driven by partisan political motives?
I think it's all a bunch of rhetoric, quite frankly, and I think it's based on, really, it's a power grab by the people who are bankrolling this entire initiative. As you pointed out again, once again, here we are trying to change this. Ohio voters voted in 2015 and 2018. To change both of our state legislative redistricting process and to change our congressional redistricting process by making sure that there were legitimate cost benefits and trade-offs throughout that process and making sure that there must be a bipartisan solution in order to get a map that would last the entire decade, because we redistrict every decade after the census.
Right.
And this last iteration, when I was on the commission, it worked exactly how it was supposed to work. We had a 7-0 unanimous bipartisan commission decision where we actually had cost benefits and trade-offs and a good, thoughtful negotiation with the other side. And we came up with a map that Democrats and Republicans agreed on that is supposed to be in place for the rest of the decade. And it's something that should not be overlooked because, frankly, much of this problem was created by a court, Supreme Court at the time, that basically wanted to say, heads, you win, tails, you lose, to the people who were the Republicans at the time. And as a result, the Democrats didn't want to negotiate because they knew as soon as things went to the court was going to side with them. And the court had signaled that numerous times throughout its rulings. The court was so off base that when we tried to appeal that ruling to the United States Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court actually vacated the orders of the Ohio Supreme Court and took up cert of the decision, to take up review of the decision, and remanded it back to the Ohio Supreme Court to reconsider its decision making. And so it's the same groups who are trying to capitalize off of that. And if you look at the people who are funding this, they're all aligned with the far left in this country. And they're the ones who are trying to take this process over. And we've seen in other states how poorly this process has worked when it's been put out similarly to what's in the language.
It's kind of interesting. The arguments on both sides of this are nearly identical, that the reason that the districts are drawn the way they are is to favor one political party or the other. The proponents of this change say that the reason the state is reliably red is because of the gerrymandered districts that protect the Republican Party. They claim that Ohio would be, at a minimum, more competitive if the districts were drawn more fairly. Is there any validity to that argument?
It's laughable, because one of the people who's actually spearheading this effort is former Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor. People have to ask how much money she's getting paid to spearhead this effort after sitting on that court that came out with all those ludicrous rulings that got vacated by the United States Supreme Court. It's laughable because it's completely disregarding the political shift in Ohio. You don't have to look any further than the way that Republicans have done in statewide elections. Donald Trump has won this state by 7 points and then 8 points. Mm-hmm. Statewide elections, we've won by, in some cases, over 20 points, almost 30 points. If you look at the area in the Youngstown area, Mahoning Valley, an area that used to be reliably blue is now reliably red. These types of shifts, combined with the fact that Democrat majority precincts, which you need to draw, you need to cobble together all those precincts to draw Democrat majority districts. You can only find Democrat majority precincts in the state of Ohio anymore in a large enough concentration in the big cities. And so it's not that this is gerrymandered and that's why we have a Republican stronghold. Ohio has been drifting to the right for the last decade. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I think people need to realize. Just look at these statewide election results. You can't gerrymander state lines. And when people vote in Ohio as a state, Ohio has overwhelmingly voted Republican in recent history.
And to be fair, it really is impossible to draw maps that someone won't find a reason to be dissatisfied with. There is no way to be completely fair, quote unquote fair, because everyone has a different definition of what would be fair. To some, it is solely geographical. You let the chips fall where they may. To others, it is having an equal number of blue and red districts within the state. To some, it is having equal numbers of blue and red voters within each district. And to some, believe that to the victors go the spoils. The majority party should have an oversized say in how the districts are drawn. And frankly, Democrats would do the same thing if they were in the majority. What is your definition of fair as it relates to this issue?
My definition of fair is exactly what we did in this last iteration, where we got both sides together. We worked out a compromise. We got a 7-0 unanimous bipartisan vote out of the commission. That's why the process was set up the way that it was, is because people could go in. The majority party had an incentive to work with the minority party. The minority party had an incentive to work with the majority party, and it worked. And frankly, the people who were more disappointed than anybody that it worked were the people who are backing this amendment. They were putting pressure on the left, on the two Democrat members of the commission, not to vote in favor of the compromise that we put on the table. And thankfully, those members saw it as a good enough deal to actually vote for it. And here we are, about to be faced with an onslaught of millions of dollars that is designed to do nothing more than confuse the voters. And it is a confusing process. You talk about geography being important. Our Constitution right now, in the version that the voters passed overwhelmingly in the past decade, contains protections for counties and cities and other areas to make sure that there isn't the typical gerrymandering where we're packing and cracking and breaking up certain areas in favor of one party.
Mm-hmm.
This new amendment would have none of that. It is solely to achieve political outcomes. And the only way you do that with the concentration of Democrat precincts in the state of Ohio is think of a piece of pie where everything goes into the urban cores and it gets dragged out into the suburbs and the rural areas to try and make sure that those Democrat voters in the urban core control that district. That's what's going to happen. The snake on the lake is going to come back in the congressional delegation because it's the only way you can draw a reliably Democrat congressional district for the city of Toledo. It's going to be bad. It's been bad in other states. It's going to be bad in here in Ohio.
What about the argument that so long as politicians are controlling the process, there will always be politics involved? It's like anything involving politicians. I mean, all due respect, politics does play some role in this. What would be the drawback of including ordinary citizens in the process?
So it would be something that voters should consider if this process of deciding who the ordinary voters, as you called them, wasn't so convoluted. There's, I think, over a dozen pages of this amendment that are devoted to how do we pick these people?
Mm-hmm.
And much of it is not subject to judicial review. It's going to be something that is very difficult to challenge if something goes awry. And frankly, what we're going to wind up with is this has happened in every other state. If you are a Republican voter, it will be anything but balanced. It is going to be mostly left-leaning people. Even the independents that will be on the commission will be left-leaning people. If you look at the maps that came out in Michigan and California and other places that have redistricting commissions, they were all gerrymandered for the left. In fact, Michigan's ended up getting thrown out by a federal district court because it violated the Voting Rights Act because it was a racial gerrymander in that case of the city of Detroit. And so remember what I told you, to draw these Democrat districts as these amendments call for,
right?
You have to break up the urban core and these large Democrat precincts. Well, guess what? These urban core large Democrat precincts are largely, in many cases, African-American neighborhoods. And so they gerrymandered against African-Americans up in Michigan. California's map, despite being in a quote-unquote independent redistricting commission, was one of the worst gerrymanders in the country. So it's not what it purports to be at the end of the day. And frankly, again, I would ask voters, look at what you approved and look at how it looked or worked this past time.
And
7-0 bipartisan.
And it just underscores everything you're saying, underscores what we were saying earlier, that it really is impossible to draw maps that someone will not find a reason
Absolutely.
To be dissatisfied with. Still, you have to acknowledge that this is a massive number of signatures that they have managed to collect to get this issue before the voters, pending certification by the Secretary of State. The last time this number of signatures was collected on a ballot initiative was in the abortion rights issue, and we all know how that turned out. Does this demonstrate to you that there is, in fact, widespread dissatisfaction with the process the way it currently exists, or have proponents of this ballot issue been disingenuous or deceptive in their tactics to collect those signatures?
I think they've been disingenuous and deceptive in large part because I don't even think they could explain their own ballot initiative if it got put in front of people. Look, I think people across the country generally strongly hate gerrymandering. They've been conditioned to hate gerrymandering, and it's one of those things that you pointed out where they'll look at it and they'll say, that looks gerrymandered to me, even though there might be a perfectly plausible reason for a map to look that way.
Yeah.
The people who are backing this capitalized off of those feelings held by the general public, and the types of things that people were asked when they put their signatures. Do you hate gerrymandering? Well, yes. Well, sign this petition. We're going to eliminate it in Ohio. It won't eliminate it at all. It's going to be exactly like it has been in the other states where this ballot initiative was modeled off of, and it's going to be a takeover by folks on the left and academia to take over this process on behalf of one side, not the other.
We will make that the final word for now, but again, continue to follow this as the verification process now begins. The Secretary of State's office and voters may, in fact, see this on the November ballot. Again, State Senator Rob McCauley with us this morning. Senator, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris.
Well, the last time you needed to pay someone, chances are good you used an online money transfer platform. There are many of them, Zelle being one of the most popular. And with fewer people carrying cash these days, they are certainly more convenient, but they are also becoming an increasing target for scam artists. And joining us this morning to talk about recognizing some of the most common digital scams is Ben Chance, Chief Fraud Risk Management Officer at Early Warning, which is the network operator of Zelle. Ben, what fraud and scam trends have you been seeing recently?
First, thanks for having me again today. And what we see as an industry is consumers interacting more and more digitally. And so scammers follow us into our digital lives. So they try and scam us over email, over phone, over text messages, and then, of course, through social media platforms and digital marketplaces as well.
It only makes sense that, you know, like everything else, they go where the money is, and this is where increasingly the money is. These are becoming much more sophisticated.
I think that's right. And so, you know, even to the point where scammers follow consumer behavior patterns. So one of the things we see in the summer months is a rise in certain types of scams. So those are, you know, concert ticket or festival related scams, because those tend to be more frequent during the summer. And of course, vacation rental scams. And then normal consumers tend to move more frequently during the summer months or do home improvement projects over the summer months. Scammers know that, and they target those as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask whether this is sort of a seasonal thing. I mean, obviously, this can and does happen at any time, but you say there you do see certain types of scams that become more common this time of year, which makes sense. Do you see an overall uptick in the summer months, or is it pretty much across the board in terms of the likelihood of being scammed?
I would say that the types of scams can shift in the summer months, but overall, you know, scammers are always out there. You know, they don't take a summer vacation, unfortunately, for me personally, and unfortunately for consumers at large. So we do see, you know, scams being attempted against consumers the full year. But again, as your behavior changes during the summer, we do see a rise in certain types of scams.
Yeah.
Ticket, concert, home improvement, vacation related. That's what we typically see in the summer months.
Okay, so let's talk about, first of all, the sort of behind the scenes things that are going on to try and stifle this. What is being done at the enterprise level, or your level, to prevent and stop these scams? And is it working?
So we invest in really two broad-based areas for your audience. The first is, of course, our technology investments, and that's how we screen millions of payments every day through Zelle in order to try and detect and prevent scam payments from occurring in the first place. And the second and equally important is our investments in consumer education. That's one of the reasons I'm here with you today. And through consumer education with you know, your audience, but also with partnerships with the Better Business Bureau and National Council on Aging, we're able to reach nearly 40 million consumers last year and educate them on how to protect themselves from scams. And so the combination of those two things are working. We were able to reduce the rate of fraud or scams on the Zelle network by nearly 50% last year, while the network itself grew nearly 30%. So it's definitely having an impact. We're definitely reducing scams across the Zelle payment ecosystem. But of course, more needs to be done on both dimensions to really stop scammers in their tracks.
And as I was going to say, ultimately, it's going to fall to the consumer to be aware of and avoid these scams to the extent that we can. For all of the safeguards out there, there are going to be those scam requests. You mentioned email, text message. They're hard to completely eliminate, so consumers have to be savvy. What tips can you offer for listeners on how they can stay safe from the scammers, not just through the summer months, but as we were saying, all year long, but particularly this time of year?
I would tell your listeners the same thing I tell my family and friends and coworkers, and that is to only use Zelle to pay people you know and trust. You know, that's people you know in the real world, is the way I describe that to my children. And that's a great way to use Zelle. That's the way we want you to use Zelle. But maybe broadly speaking, and equally important, is never give away your bank account credentials over the phone. That one-time passcode or that PIN code that you have on your bank account, your bank is never going to ask you for that. The one that's asking for that on the phone is a scammer. Never divulge that. If you divulge that, you're actually giving away access to your account. And then also important to recognize is that you really just can't trust caller ID as a consumer. So just because a particular financial institution or maybe your cable provider or maybe your local sheriff's department is being presented in your caller ID, that does not mean that's who it actually is. So I encourage consumers, frankly, just to not answer the phone. Let it go to voicemail. And if you think there's a legitimate request behind that, instead of calling that number back directly, go to your billing statement for that service provider or for your bank, or call the 800 number that's on the back of your card. But don't use the number the scammer just gave to you. Find an independent, legitimate number and use that to contact that institution.
All very good advice. Let me ask this. If someone does believe that they are a victim of a scam, maybe for all of the precautions, they've realized something is amiss, maybe a little too late. It can happen. Is there any recourse, any hope of reversing a transaction, getting your money back?
So the short answer is yes. But it's imperative that as a consumer, you contact your financial institution as soon as possible. If you think you've been the victim of a scam, we've got information on how to protect yourself and what to do, on our website. And then there are also the information on the Federal Trade Commission website as well. But fundamentally, I would encourage consumers to stop that scammer in their tracks, hang up that phone call, don't respond to that text, don't click on that link in that email first and foremost. But if they do think they've been the victim, I encourage them to report that as soon as possible to their financial institution so that they can take the appropriate next steps.
And hopefully get the money back, but at a very minimum, you can avoid a lot of hassle by just being aware ahead of time. Again, Ben Chance is Chief Fraud Risk Management Officer at Early Warning, the network operator of Zelle, talking about protecting ourselves, these digital payment money transfer platforms that we're all familiar with. Ben, where do we get more information?
I would encourage your audience to go to zellepay.com/safety-education. That has a wealth of resources on scam trends, what to look out for, what to do if you feel like you're stressed or in a pressure situation. But it also has information on how to report to your financial institution if you think you've been the victim of a scam, and also how to report that to the Federal Trade Commission as well.
Ben, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me today. Really appreciate it.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
A man in Memphis allegedly did a lot of damage at a local gas station while high on drugs the other day. Now, I'm not sure whether this was he was having too much fun over the 4th of July weekend or exactly when this happened, but police say that Travis Lewis climbed into the ceiling of the gas station, not onto the roof. When I initially saw this story, I thought they were saying that he actually climbed on the roof of the gas station. No, he climbed into the ceiling from the inside. An employee of the Exxon station on Rhodes Avenue there in Memphis called the cops when the employee saw the man walk to the back of the store, remove several ceiling tiles, and then climb right up into the ceiling. Said he really should not be doing that. When the cops responded, Mr. Lewis apparently told authorities that he had smoked a lot of marijuana and may have taken some ecstasy as well. they removed him from the store. But not before he reportedly caused an estimated $10,000 worth of damage. Climbing into the ceiling. All right. Elsewhere in the broken news, a man in Fargo has been arrested in connection with a vandalism incident at a local business. Police say it happened actually late last month, so this was not a 4th of July, you know, too much partying kind of thing. Apparently, 27-year-old Jose Rodriguez threw a rock at an ATM at a business along South 13th Avenue in Fargo, leaving the ATM severely damaged. Investigators used surveillance video to identify the suspect. Officers recognized him from a previous call in which they removed him from the same business. He apparently was angry at the business. I don't know what kind of business this is, but one that would have an ATM, which just about any business would have these days. Many of those, so I don't know that it was a bank necessarily. A lot of businesses have ATMs. But he apparently had a problem with the business. Threw a rock at the ATM, he faces several charges, including felony vandalism and criminal trespassing. what his problem was with the ATM? But he also is now under arrest. Got to have a story out of Florida. There's a man I don't know which city in Florida. Not that it matters. 41-year-old Michael Patrick Fleming is under arrest after attempting to rob a Chase Bank branch of one penny. He tried to rob you saw that right. It is one penny. That he tried to steal. He handed the teller a note demanding 1 cent. When the teller denied Mr. Fleming's request, he reportedly threatened her, claiming that he had a gun, and that led her to call the police. According to the arrest report, Mr. Fleming, who it turns out was unarmed, said that he was expecting the teller to just give him the penny. And he planned, he said, had he gotten his penny, he would have just sat in the chair and waited for law enforcement to show up. So clearly his intent was not to get rich, but to get arrested. And Mr. Fleming got his wish, was locked up, and ironically held on $5,000 bail. For the attempt to steal a penny. $5,000 bail. Why he wanted to get arrested at this point remains a mystery. But then again, it's Florida, so I don't know that they really necessarily need a reason for some of the dumb things that they do in the state of Florida. It's got to be the most unusual robbery ever. Go into the teller and say, give me a penny. Not give me all the cash, not even give me all the change in the drawer. Just give me a penny. All right. Couple of stories from the international file, the broken news here. Now, again, the general rule of thumb in the broken news is that it's not funny when people die. We generally try to avoid stories that have a fatal component to them. However, there are always those exceptions. Cases where people die through their own stupidity, where it is just too incredibly dumb to pass up. You know what I mean? It's, some people deserve to be laughed at even when they die. The Navy in Sri Lanka has reported that 5 fishermen have passed away after drinking an unknown liquid from bottles that they found at sea. From bottles they found at sea. In addition to the 5 that have passed, there 3 more remain in critical condition. According to a spokesperson for the Sri Lankan Navy, the bottles are believed to have contained some form of alcohol, but they don't know. Unfortunately, the crew may have shared these bottles with other fishing boats, and so there may be more victims. We don't yet know. The Navy is now attempting to contact all the boats that this fishing vessel made contact with to alert them not to drink the mystery liquid. You would think that that would be just basic. Find a bottle in the ocean. Hey, it's got something in it. Let's drink it. Probably not the wisest thing to do. We found a bottle in the ocean. Let's drink it. What do you think is going to happen? I mean, clearly you don't think you're going to die, but still. You wouldn't think that you would have to tell people don't drink what's in the bottle that you find in the ocean, but apparently not. I guess they've been at sea for a long time. Maybe it was looking good. And finally, in the broken news this morning, thousands of protesters marched in Barcelona over the weekend, squirting tourists with water guns. That sounds like fun. Protesters were carrying signs with slogans like "Barcelona is not for sale" and "Tourists go home." apparently, there's been quite an influx of tourists behaving badly in resort towns like Barcelona, and the natives there have had enough. Visitors at popular restaurants received the water treatment as they ate outside. Not only have tourists been behaving badly, but because of the influx of tourists, rent in cities like Barcelona has gone up 18% in 1 year. It's causing, you know, great inflation, and protesters blame rising costs and other economic changes on the influx of tourists. The mayor of Barcelona has announced a plan to phase out short-term rentals in the city by 2028. But that's not soon enough for these protesters around the city squirting tourists with water guns. As long as they're just water guns, I guess. There you go. That is today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
WFIN needs your help to stuff the bus with school supplies for needy students in our area. Go to WFIN.com for donation information. Bring your donation to the Yellow School Bus at the Tiffin Avenue McDonald's in Findlay Thursday and Friday, July 25th and 26th from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Saturday, July 27th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. School supply registration forms are required and can be accessed at cchsupport.org. Stuff the Bus, brought to you by McDonald's and 1330 WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. How much do you trust other people? According to data from the National Opinion Research Center, probably less than you used to. In fact, the data finds that since 1972, Americans' trust in others has tanked. So in the past 50 years, we have become much less trusting of others. In heartland states like Kansas and Nebraska, about 60% of residents considered themselves trusting of others back in the 70s. That percentage has dropped now to the 20 to 30% range. It's a pretty significant drop. In 2022, less than 20% of Texans and New Yorkers felt that others could be trusted. In Ohio, which used to be in the 40 to 50% range, roughly half of Ohioans said that other people were trustworthy in general. That number is now in the 30 to 40% range. They've gone from 40 to 50% to 30 to 40%. Now, mind you, the compilation of this data, the breakdown of this data in this report that I saw did not give a specific number state by state. But overall, the number of Americans who say they trust other people has dropped from 46.2% in 1972 down to just 25.3% in 2022 over the course of 50 years. We are much less trusting these days than now. You can certainly argue that in many cases, people have given us reason to be less trusting. And I don't know that this delineated between whether we feel people that we know are trustworthy versus people that we don't know are trustworthy. But the overall numbers certainly indicate that we are a much less trusting, much more cautious society, which, of course, is not always necessarily a bad thing. Time now to get an update on what's happening. The Hancock County OSU Extension and 4-H program as summer hits full swing and the county and state fairs are getting closer here. Lauren Berner-Kitzler from the Hancock County 4-H program is with us this morning. Before we even talk about the fair, the state fair especially, is right around the corner now. Before we even get to that, you just finished up 4-H camp, right?
We did, yes. Yeah. So it was a very successful 5 days at 4-H Camp Ohio. So we took 175 campers here from Hancock County. So it was very good. It was an enjoyable week. It was a little warm. We did have a little bit of rain, but you know, that's part of camp. So you're adapting all of the weather. So it was very good.
Probably have that every year, I would imagine, or most years.
Yes.
At some point or another. So terrific. And what is the big, I don't want to say the big draw or the big purpose of camp? I mean, what do you hope at the end of the day the kids take away from it? I mean, we all remember, you know, camp being fun and, you know, all of the great activities. But at the end of the day, what's the big takeaway?
I would say the big takeaway for camp is just creating that friendship, that relationship with new people from the county.
Yeah.
Getting to experience the outdoors of nature. A lot of kiddos don't get that experience, whether that's taking a nature hike, whether that is playing with our bottle rockets, STEM related, or making butter. And something that we incorporated new this year was we incorporated a session called Bread to Harvest, where the campers actually got to make their own loaf of bread. And then on the last day of camp for dinner, we actually served that bread in place of our rolls. And then one of the other sessions we had was making butter. So, you know, the old school, you know, shake it in a can or into a jar. And then they got to actually enjoy that butter with their bread. So it was really neat to see their faces of, hey, I made this.
Yeah.
And this is now what it looks like that we now get to share and eat with everyone.
Very
so
cool.
Overall, just taking away good memories and that strong relationship within the county.
So now we kind of turn our attention full bore into preparing for the fair. Again, not just the county fair, but the state fair.
Absolutely. So there are 16 days until the Ohio State Fair. So we are starting our project judging actually this week, Tuesday and Thursday, to get our members here in the county prepared for that. So
those are the project judging for, well, the first ones are for non-member livestock, right?
Yep, that is correct. So this Tuesday and Thursday are our project judgings for our non-livestock members. So those are projects such as STEM, such as knot, such as mowing, anything non-livestock related.
Anything non-livestock. Yes. And then the livestock project judging is coming up here in about a month.
Yep. So August 6th is that date set for all of our livestock members. So anyone taking livestock to the fair will go through this judging on August 6th.
Okay. Now that you're talking about judging for the Hancock County Fair,
that
right?
That is correct. Yep. Okay. So our non-livestock is getting our members ready for state fair, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And our livestock one is gearing up towards the Hancock County Fair.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. Because you actually do the judging before the fair actually arrives.
That is correct. Yep.
Yeah. Kind of interesting there, the timeline on how all of that works. With the state fair right around the corner, obviously, by its very nature, you've got competitors coming in from all over the state. How many, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but how many do we generally have from Hancock County that take projects to the state fair?
So I don't know necessarily a number, but we do have quite a wide variety, whether they're taking their non-livestock projects that we have from judging to state fair, as well as our livestock members. We do have quite a few livestock members that also take and exhibit their livestock from sheep, goats, chickens, hogs, cattle at the state fair as well, as also our horses as well.
So so how does this work? I mean, because I always believed, and maybe erroneously, that the way you got to the state fair was to be successful at the county level, and then you went best of the best. But you're saying the livestock project judging would be after the state fair.
So. That is correct. Yep. So it kind of works in a little bit different way. So for your non-livestock projects, yes, they get judged beforehand. We are sending the best of the best from our county down there to participate to represent Hancock County.
Okay.
Our livestock members, they actually get to go down kind of in advance before they're judging, just how the Ohio State Fair schedule lays with our county. Mm-hmm. But all of our members of livestock are welcome to attend the Ohio State Fair.
So they kind of take what they feel are their best animals.
Correct. Yep. Down there and represent Hancock
and
County.
And then once they, can those same animals then be presented at the county fair?
That is correct. Yep. So if they do decide to go down to the state fair, now if they win grand champion or reserve champion down at the state fair, those are terminal animals that stay down at the state fair. Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. But if, you know, of course, we always want our members to achieve grand champion and reserve.
Sure.
But if that doesn't happen, that's okay. They can then come back with those animals and participate and exhibit those at our Hancock County fair.
Okay. So kind of the way that works for those who didn't know the full ins and outs of that. So you learned something here this morning. And by the way, speaking of the county fair, you're going to have a lot of things going on at the fair itself.
We are, yes. So we have several things planned and ready to go. So our biggest thing, and I'm super excited about this, we had it for one day last year, but this year we get it for 2 days, and it's our OSU STEM bus. So the Ohio State University went together and purchased a bus, a mobile bus that travels around to different county fairs, different events, all STEM related. So there's all kinds of robots, there's all kinds of Indy cars or spherables, anything STEM related you can think of is all hands-on for our members to participate. So super exciting is I was able to reserve it for a Wednesday and Thursday of our Hancock County Fair.
Okay.
So it'll sit right outside of our youth building. And anyone can come in and tour the bus or play on a hands-on experiment of anything STEM related.
I remember talking about this last year, and it was a big deal. So if folks missed it or want to go through again, you're actually, as you said, 2 days
correct.
This year.
Yep, we have it 2 days. So it was a huge hit last year. We only had it for one day last year, but I wasn't exactly sure how it'd go over. And it went over so well. And it was super exciting to see all of the members and even non-4-H members. I mean, this bus is open to anybody that comes into the Hancock County Fair. You do not have to be in 4-H. Or have a 4-H background to go through this bus.
Well, I tell you what, when you talk about robots and really fast cars, I mean, that's going to be a hit.
Sells people every time. Yes.
Absolutely. It doesn't take much to convince people that this is pretty cool. You'll also have a lot of other programming, just locally generated programming, hands-on activities, that kind of thing.
Yep. So I'm teaming up with our FCS Family and Consumer Science educator, Jennifer Little, and we are going to be doing programming every day at 11 and 1 in our youth building there. So Jennifer's going to be kind of talking on the health side of things, and then I'm obviously going to be there presenting on the 4-H side of things and kind of connecting them together. So again, that is every day from 11 at 11 and 1 that we'll both be there doing programming there at the front of the youth building. So,
and by the way, speaking of Jennifer, I know she's got some stuff going on that we want to make sure that we highlight as well, since we have you here.
Yes, she sure does. So Jennifer is a busy lady, which is wonderful. But Jennifer is hosting a food preservation palooza coming up Friday, July 12th from 1 to 3 at our extension office there in the big, large conference room. And this palooza is open to anybody that has interest in canning, interest in preservation of food. She will have all kinds of new recipes that they can pick up and then also have the ability to sign up for door prizes.
Okay.
So from 1 to 3 on Friday, July 11th.
Okay.
July 12th, excuse me, July 12th.
And that's coming up this Friday. Do folks need to register for that?
I believe it's a come and go. And if you do have canner questions as well, she is also going to be doing canner gauge checks as well. So.
Yeah.
You are.
You don't want to, you want to make sure that everything works properly.
That's right. So if you're a canner, this is a place for you to be to get some recipes and tips and tricks from Miss Jennifer.
Absolutely. It is becoming increasingly popular as grocery prices rise, as a hedge against the inflation and all of that. But you definitely want to know what you're doing. It is not something that you go in.
And Jennifer is the person that will be able to share all of that knowledge with you.
Excellent. We've got a link up for more information from the Hancock County OSU Extension and 4-H program. Again, Lauren Berner-Kitzler is with us this morning. Lots of things going on.
It is now. Summer is fully underway. It's exciting, and the fair is going to be here before we know it.
Lauren, thanks very much for dropping by.
Yes, you have a great day.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Once again, remember, you can get more information about all of the topics we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. And that, of course, goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, Pinching Pennies Made Easy. Some simple strategies from AARP's latest list of 99 great ways to save. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.